Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 he's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No, 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 no.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. More and more countries around the world are setting up medical cannabis programs. Most states in the U.S. have some form of medical cannabis program or other. Even Oklahoma has medical cannabis these days. The problem, the reason that states have had to set up their own medical cannabis programs, is that the marijuana plant is listed in Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. Now, that act was essentially created in order to fulfill an international treaty obligation that the U.S. had because of the U.N.'s 1961 Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs. The scheduling of marijuana has become more of a controversial issue these days, partly from the proliferation of medical cannabis programs, but more from the growing interest in adult social use legalization. Currently, the marijuana plant and marijuana resin are listed in the 1961 Single Convention's Schedule 1 and Schedule 4. The Single Convention's Schedule 1 is different from the U.S. schedules. See, that Schedule 1 simply means that the substance is considered dangerous and should be tightly restricted. The U.N.'s Schedule 4 lists substances that are to be banned. All substances that are listed in the U.N. Schedule 4 are also listed in the U.N.'s Schedule 1. In the U.S. system, substances in our Schedule 1, like marijuana and heroin, are banned. A couple of years ago, the World Health Organization was tasked with evaluating the scientific and medical evidence on marijuana. Such a review had never been done before, which kind of raises the question of how the scheduling of marijuana could be justified in the first place. But I digress. The WHO Expert Committee on Drug Dependence was also tasked with making recommendations on the scheduling. Now, one of its recommendations was that the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs should take the marijuana plant out of the UN's Schedule 4 so that it would no longer have to be banned. They also recommended leaving it in Schedule 1 so that it would still be tightly restricted. And why that matters is that the United States and many, many other countries based their controlled substances scheduling, their control of controlled substances, as it were, on the UN's Single Convention. On today's edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to speak with one of the American advocates who's been working with the WHO and with the UN Commission on Narcotic Drugs in Vienna to move this review and the scheduling recommendations forward. Michael Kravitz is the Director of Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. I asked him first to clarify what exactly the WHO's expert committee was recommending.
There was considerable confusion around CBD. If you ask DEA about CBD, they say, oh, that's drawn from marijuana. Of course, it's part of marijuana. It's marijuana. If you ask someone that's doing hemp work or doing hemp food products or working in the hemp industry what CBD is, and says, no, CBD is drawn from hemp. It's a nutritional supplement. It can be a medicine. You have to get it approved by FDA. And it has been approved by FDA as a medicine. So this is very confusing. What the World Health Organization has recommended is a sentence, a note, in the margins of the treaty that just makes it clear that CBD is not a subject of control. Just because you can get it for marijuana doesn't make it marijuana. No, it's not marijuana. No, it's not a subject of control. That really could help a lot to clear things up if that note gets inserted, if we win that vote and get that note inserted. It'll make it clear that even with a dash of THC, CBD, even from plant material, doesn't matter if it's naturally occurring or CBD synthetic, is not to be controlled as a drug. The other thing
to
that
be clear,
it,
that means that essentially means descheduling. I mean, literally removing CBD itself from this.
They're clarifying that it isn't in the schedule, but from our perspective, you can look at it as descheduling. Sure.
Yeah. Which would rescheduling is just it means moving the thing to a different schedule.
Well, they're putting a margin note that makes it clear that CBD is not a subject of control. So in essence, they're making both the argument that it's not a subject of control and that it never has been.
Interesting. I'm sorry for interrupting. That was just, it's just that's...
Oh, no. So, and the other things that it's doing, it's taking THC out of the 1971 treaty, which is all about hallucinogenics and psychotropics, and putting it back kind of where it belongs with cannabis from the 61 treaty. If you're asking why that all needs to happen, it's all timing. Back in 1961, they didn't know what THC was yet. In the 71 treaty, when they passed it, they had found out what THC was, and it was convenient to put it in the 71 treaty. And I think back then they were talking about it a lot more in terms of a hallucinogen. I think these days, scientists and those in the know, even police, they don't really talk about cannabis in terms of hallucinogen anymore. And it really would make more sense for THC, synthetic or natural, to be in the same place as the plant material that produces THC. It's very confusing. So they're talking about rectifying that. And also, they're talking about medicines where it's hard to pull the THC out. In other words, some sort of composite medicine, not necessarily FDA-approved, but an FDA-approved medicine would certainly satisfy this criteria. They're recommending an even lower schedule, Schedule 3 in the treaty. So they're talking about taking it out of cannabis, whole cannabis, out of Schedule 4, but leaving it in Schedule 1, which is not the same as USA Schedule 1. It's a lot less restrictive, so you know. And then they're talking about, you know, preparations that can't be so easily abused being the lowest schedule available, allowing for over-the-counter sales without a prescription. Is what that calls for in the treaty, Schedule 3. So it's a really amazing recommendation. And again, you know, it's the World Health Organization's job to make these recommendations. They're the ones that make these kind of evidentiary reviews. And if the United Nations wants to call its cannabis policy evidence-based, they really have no choice but to accept these recommendations. They are fair. They were done with an exhaustive amount of study, dozens of higher institutions of learning involved, and I think they've done a fair job. The critics would say, oh, well, you shouldn't have cannabis in Schedule 1. That should have been rescheduled out of Schedule 1. But two things about that. One, those critics didn't bring that up during the process. I wish they had, but they didn't. And we never really got to discuss this during the process. That's a shame, because we all resolved during the process that was okay for it to leave in Schedule 1 because of the fact that it would actually require a rewrite of the treaty. It's not just a rescheduling recommendation at that point. The treaty is written around cannabis. They said things that look like cannabis are put into Schedule 1. So it's going to be more than just rescheduling to pull cannabis out of Schedule 1. And also, coca is in Schedule 1 as well. And coca and cannabis together in that schedule, neither one of them belong there. I think that a action, you know, by the United Nations later on to remove these plant materials from Schedule 1 and figure out what's more appropriate, rewrite the sections of the treaty that need to be rewritten, I think that's a lift for the United Nations to do. That's my thinking personally, but also my thinking with my organizational hat on working as a coalition. We really don't feel slighted by that. The Transnational Institute has been kind of championing the cause of rejecting the World Health Organization's findings because of just that, because it's inconsistent. It's inconsistent. Even the World Health Organization pointed out that cannabis really doesn't belong in Schedule 1. It's not like a lot of the other things that are in Schedule 1. But there's where we are. And I think that in the end, I think this is actually something we can get past through the commission. Again, because it's reasonable, it's middle of the road, and it's completely based on evidence. It doesn't go off on a, you know, it doesn't do what we want them to do, it doesn't do what we don't want them to do. I think it's a compromise.
Similarity, indeed, is one of the is the reason that that the recommendation to remove it from the 61's Schedule 4, because it was so dissimilar from the other substances that were in that list of complete bans.
Absolutely. In Schedule 4, it was an absurdity. There was absolute consensus that cannabis didn't belong in Schedule 4.
Now, clarify. You mentioned coca and cannabis is not belonging in Schedule 1. Would you say, what do you think? Would the plant matter, the cannabis plant, the coca plant, should be either removed from the schedules or at least moved further down? And then the extracts, so cocaine and THC, I guess, is in Schedule 1 now, right? Or is that their suggestion?
This is one of those areas where my associate, the Rivillet, who I work with over there at the UN, and we've been kind of co-authors on all of these documents. I wish he could answer that, because I think he'd be more ready to answer. But my take is that where we're at right now is that these plant materials don't belong there, but then again, we don't have real consensus on exactly what we should do. I think the idea to remove all the plant materials from control completely and then only control the drugs. In other words, you have THC controlled. Why do you need the plant material controls? If you are growing the plant material as a in the treaty, it strictly allows for horticultural use and it strictly allows for industrial use. So if you're growing it to make, you know, bedding for your horses, or you grow it because you think it looks pretty in your window box, that's of no concern to the drug authorities, really, at the local level all the way up to the UN. Only it becomes a concern is if you try to produce the drug substance from the plant material. So I think it makes sense to actually remove these plant substances themselves from control and only control the substances that are derived from them. I think my opinion would be to do that.
We're going back to the yippies from the 1980s. The natural plant drugs, put stricter controls on the things that are further out the processed. Use the have the things like coca products available to sort of sop up the market. I mean, if there's a legitimate market for coca products that don't, you know, that doesn't involve the processing into cocaine, then you just give the farmers an income. And the raw materials no longer available to the cartels. I mean, it's actually a pretty straightforward kind of way to deal with the whole thing.
You know, I witnessed some great stuff over the years, and one of the things I witnessed was President Evo Morales speaking for Bolivia over at the UN about coca. And what he said applied to cannabis completely. If you just pulled the word coca out and put cannabis in, he was talking about how it had been used as a medicine. It was used by a group of people in their cultural habits and rituals going way, way back. And it was a food. It was a medicine. It was part of their rituals and practices. And that all these great products are derived from it. And that it's not a drug. He emphasized that Bolivia was willing and ready to step up and fight against very dangerous drugs, but including cocaine. But coca was not cocaine, and they needed to draw a line that allowed their people to commerce in this and to utilize this substance that had been part of their way of life for forever. And I just thought it was wonderful. In fact, we got to talk to the president after that in the NGO room, and several people from the cannabis movement were asking him for help. And of course, that was the wrong thing to ask him. He wasn't there to work on cannabis issues for us. but nonetheless, I think, if we had said, hey, thank you for that, and we're going to use that as a model for what we're going to try to do in cannabis, it's a real inspiration to us, I think he would have liked that better.
The oil manufacturers are going to be upset about what I'm about to say, but carrying that analogy over towards the cannabis issue, then I listened to that discussion, and when they were starting to talk about THC, there were there was concern, among the people out there among the delegates about CND and the about THC and the stories they had heard, and it strikes me that, well, the concerns about really high levels of THC, natural plant product. If the plant product is available, then you've got, less. Yeah, I suppose you'd have to have some kind of a price mechanism to keep people from processing into oils and doing the high-powered concentrates. That's a thought that's got to be developed later.
That also, I think, is an argument for doing this slowly and leaving as a bridge cannabis where it is in Schedule 1, taking it out of Schedule 4 so it's no longer, as you say, prohibited, but it would be available as a medicine and normalized as a medicine, but still controlled. And if someone was to make a lot of high potency oil, that's not going to be an insignificant thing. It's going to be something that, just like making coca a paste out of coca or anything else, it's something I think governments will be able to easily still enforce their drug laws even with these changes. It's just going to take a little bit of the sting out of it mostly for the user and for the patients, because right now it's such a big hammer that they're going after these plant materials with, that it prevents all access. I mean, I don't need to tell you how hard it is in some places to get access.
You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, and on today's show, we're talking with Michael Kravitz from Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. We're talking about the WHO's recommendations on rescheduling cannabis so that it would no longer be banned internationally. Well, I mean, that's where we started. I mean, it's a kind of a wide-ranging conversation, really. But, you know, Michael and I have known each other for decades. You know how it is, right? Yeah. Well, let's get back to that conversation. And it's not like it's a given. I mean, as you were saying, the Russian delegate, it's not just the Russian, the Singapore delegate, the Nigerian delegate was, you know, went on at great length about why he opposed any kind of changes. But the Russian delegate was especially, I mean, you know, arguing is there's no scientific medical journal, no professional journals. And it's like, yes, the technical report doesn't have a list of citations. That's in the specific cannabis. That's in the other report to which that.
Yeah, it's in one of the 15 other reports.
Yeah. That one has over 200 footnotes to all kinds of professional, you know, peer-reviewed scientific and medical publications. It's that, but it and it's right there. It's not like the Russian delegate is not aware of this, but he's allowed to say what he does, and the WHO delegate. We broadcast this on last week's show. He says what he does. The WHO delegate has to be politic, has to be diplomatic, and can't just say, "You lying sack, you know exactly where all those citations are. You're just doing this because you're being willfully obstinate." You can't say that.
The World Health Organization representative does get a lot of points for their composure, don't they?
Which is the frustrating part, because it has to be so diplomatic. They can. It just simply lie or simply be willfully, you know, willfully ignorant. And it's, you know, they just get away with it because, well, what is, you know, there's no penalty because that's the national policy. And that's the problem. Russia is a big mover against, you know, Russia is very much a drug war nation.
I want to say two things about that. One is the important part of the process, and that is Russia only has one vote here. It's not like the consensus-driven process that the Bolivian government was up against when they were trying to do a COCA resolution. This is a World Health Organization recommendation because of the fact that the World Health Organization is doing this inside the process of the UN system and at the behest of the UN. The recommendations are taken really on faith, and it only takes a majority vote instead of consensus. So Russia can only stop them as much as their one little vote or their little team of five votes or whatever in the 53 member states. I don't think that they've got enough momentum to really stop us. If we have member states that are fair, balanced, or member states that have cannabis programs and those that are even eyeing reform, would almost put us over just that list. But the other thing I want to say is this, Doug. These guys, looking at it from their perspective, looking at it from Russia's perspective, if they really want this treaty, which is their prohibition treaty, it's their favorite thing, if they wanted to actually survive this time period, to actually have any chance of making it, then they need to, like what I was saying before about evidence base, that also goes to longevity, sustainability of the treaty itself. If you turn the entire treaty into some sort of weapon of politics in this way and completely, you know, throw out evidence and the World Health Organization's recommendations, you won't just irritate the WHO, a partner at the world level that we need, by the way, a very, very important partner. You wouldn't just be dissing them. You'd also be dissing yourself, because this is the chance for the system to stay fit to purpose at all. If it's fit to purpose at all, this is its chance. And there is going to be a pull, a tension for reform as we go to regulation and away from prohibition. The inevitability of that. You and I know that. We know what's coming because we've watched what's happened before at the, you know, the smaller level in the United States and elsewhere. We know what's coming next. And Russia, they should know as well that the writing is on the wall for the end of prohibition. And if you want to maintain control, if you want to maintain a kind of a disciplined approach as we move from one system to another, I recommend that you don't throw out the treaty.
Well, I hope you're right. I hope you're right. I mean, it's not like the Soviet Union continued on until the very bitter end when it collapsed suddenly. And no, that actually is exactly what happened. Anyway, let's hope that
China as far as I understand, just like last week, finally started talking about controlling fentanyl inside of their borders. And they're the number one exporter of this stuff that's killing our people on the streets. If you listen to the news on the news in the United States, it makes it sound like, oh, doctors are writing prescription for opiates. They get these patients addicted to opiates. The next thing you know, they die. No, there's like five steps in between where you find your way to, off the market because you're turned off of the prescriptions because of the drug war, because of the hype on TV, and you wind up on the street and you start taking heroin and it gets laced with fentanyl and you die. It's been the actual, narrative. And they're not connected to prescription use or doctor visits. In the statistics that the government presents, it's all, this bait and switch as usual. And these countries need to be held accountable. When Russia floods the market with ecstasy pills or whatever it does, China, floods the market with fentanyl, this is not tit for tat for CBD. I'm sorry, and they're probably going to be flooding the market with CBD as well. I wouldn't be surprised if China is already gearing up to supply the world with CBD
The next big thing is the next big thing in NPS in this country at least is going to be the synthetic cathinones, the stimulants, the new generation of stimulants that'll be more like cocaine with the nice clean and won't have that harsh and terrible taste and the rest of meth, but it'll have the nice smoother. Maybe it's this, it cheaper, easier to produce with precursors that are more easily available and probably a lot stronger, much like with the, but yeah, we're shifting into that time of stimulants.
I've always been concerned, Doug, as a former military person, an Air Force vet, I've always been concerned from a kind of a national security perspective about drugs. And I'll tell you, as you know, the narrative that drugs are universally addicting, that you start on drugs and you become hooked, and that enough people will do that you need to keep drugs off the hands of people, is a false narrative. It's just absolutely false. It doesn't work that way. Everyone doesn't get hooked from drugs. If they did, it would be a very different story. But it doesn't work that way. But I've always been actually concerned that they would keep playing with this. And when I say playing with this, I mean the government goes after a drug, they pull that drug off the street, the criminal cartels create a new drug, and then they go after that drug, and they repeat this cycle again and again, always going to a more dangerous drug. And one day they may actually come on to some kind of more universally addicting substance. I God forbid.
Yeah, it's, well, certainly, it's that whole thing about the iron law of prohibition, right? That just you just keep smaller and more potent, smaller and more potent. And it's the
We're now down to the cops had a little folding table covered with a few baggies of evidence that were fentanyl, and he said it was enough to get everybody in the whole tri-city area, I think, of Ohio, where he was showing the show from on the news. It was enough to get the whole tri-city area dead to kill everyone. I mean, it's dangerous stuff. It's you measure it a dose in terms of micrograms, thousandths of a gram, and maybe 10 or 20 micrograms is a dose. This is stuff that you can't measure out by eye. If they're just dumping some powder from one bag to another, then no wonder people are dying.
Well, that's why they need the drug testing facilities at safe consumption facilities, because that way people can find out what's in their bag, as it were. And people do that. They sometimes decide, maybe I won't do this stuff. Maybe they just decide, okay, I'll only do a little bit of it. And that because they're going to do some. It's just a question of knowing what the strength is. It's the difference between knowing it's the difference between knowing that what's in that glass is a 5% ABV beer as opposed to a 190 proof 95% alcohol by volume Everclear. Or other grain alcohol drinks are available.
I'm amazed at how folks out there in positions of authority don't check themselves, and they promote the opposite position of what they think they're promoting. I mean, the first one that jumps to mind is Kevin Sabet with Project Sam. He's always talking about preventing another big tobacco, preventing big marijuana. But his actions to cause the legislatures to have to react to every single little complaint that he's raising, which are all like, cherry-picked data and everything else to try to just paint cannabis bad, spin cannabis as bad. What he does is he causes the whole system to overreact. and cause the system to create lots and lots and lots of hoops to jump through to produce cannabis, and that favors big marijuana. That actually creates the very thing that he's trying to get rid of. And with drugs, you know, the government is always talking about banning drugs, getting drugs off the street, and when people find out that there was a drug two or three streets over that killed somebody, it doesn't drive people away from that drug. It actually drives people to that street. They go buy drugs on that street because they heard someone died, and they know if someone died, it must be really strong. I mean, it's that upside down. The drug war does the exact opposite of what it intends to do in every respect. Uruguay had it right. You know, if we want to save lives, protect the public, you know, actually produce medicinal access, all these things that we claim as goals, then the drug war has got to get out of the way.
Exactly. All right, again, folks, I've been speaking with Michael Kravitz, Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, and a whole host of other activism and stuff. Michael, any closing thoughts? And give us the social media and other website and web address where we can keep up with the work that you're doing.
Sure. So the closing thought is that this timeline runs till March 2020, and that's when we'll have this majority vote. And we need to put pressure on these 53 countries that are members of the Commission on Narcotic Drugs to do the right thing and accept these recommendations. All hands on deck. Everybody has a role. You can help in a multitude of ways. Just pay attention to it and talk to your governmental leaders would be a good start. But anything you want to do to help. Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access, you can find us on Facebook, Facebook.com/USA.VMCA, as in Veterans Medical Cannabis Access.
Terrific. Mike, thanks a lot. The best of luck with everything, man.
Thanks. Thanks so much, man. It's exciting to be in the middle of such a big thing. You know, it's a 100-year correction. It may not be the end of the drug war, but it's fun.
Right on. And for now, that's it. I want to thank you for joining us. You have been listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. I want to thank my guest, Michael Kravitz from Veterans for Medical Cannabis Access. Does tremendous work out there. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!